welcome to Stories to Dismember, and you hanging out with your host, Aaron, and I am here with my two co-hosts, Ariel and Azriel. Hey, hey.
Salutations. Happy Monday.
Greetings.
And if you've been playing along at home, you know that we are currently finishing up our resurrection movie / resurrection horror theme for this month. And the last movie we are doing is a classic, and it is the 1931 film Frankenstein.
It's Frankenstein.
Frankenstein. Frankenstein. And this movie was picked by no other than Ariel. And maybe she can tell us why she picked this movie. Maybe because we haven't
It's before. Been a while since I've seen this movie. I think I watched it when I was a kid because, you know, as a kid, you can kind of watch these films and not get too creeped out. But it's a classic, you know. If you like horror films, you got to put this on your list to watch at least once in your life. You may not like it. It may be kind of, you know, tame in comparison to what we're used to today. But you got to appreciate the classics for what they were back then. And that's why I like to throw in these classics every now and again to appreciate them. Because I feel like sometimes, you know, everybody's kind of seen them. And there may be some folks that are new to horror that, you know, didn't get the opportunity to see these yet.
Exactly. Well, it was a lot of fun to get to watch this again. And it's a short movie, so it's pretty easy watch. It's what, like a little bit over an hour, I guess. And notice a lot of the older movies are like that. They're not very, at least movies like this are not very long.
Yeah, they're not like 3 hours long like today's movies.
Yeah.
You don't got to take an intermission.
Pause. I got to pause. Sometimes it takes me 2 to 3 days to watch a movie because it's 3 hours. I can't pay attention.
I know. I know. I just watched like a 3 hour movie and I had to like break it up into 2 days worth of watching. I think it was why am I blanking right now? It was the one that won the Oscar for this year. There's been like a ton of 3 hour movies coming out recently and I just have to prepare myself mentally. Oh, Oppenheimer. That's the one that I just recently watched. I was getting all of the 3 hour movies mixed together.
All right. Yeah, there's been quite a few lately. It's can be a struggle. But all right. Well, I'm ready to jump into this one if Ariel's ready to throw the switch and get this thing cooking.
Yeah, I'm just going to go over like a little bit about the movie itself before we get into the plot. So Obviously this movie is based on Mary Shelley's novel called... there were two working names for it. It was The Modern Prometheus or Frankenstein's Monster. So this movie is kind of, it has bits and pieces from the book. But I would say overall, if you really like the book, the movie doesn't really capture the sort of element of creation and what is God and who can play God. It kind of goes over that a little bit, but not to the full extent. So this is more of like an entertainment film. And, you know, it's for its time. This was like a pre-code era film. It was 1931. So really before they started putting censorship on movies and, you know, talkies came out in like the 1920s. So this movie's pretty early on. And very impressive in terms of what they were able to pull off in terms of sound and lighting and special effects. The movie was produced by Carl, I don't know how to say his name, Lamell. I'm just going to go Lamell Jr. and yeah, directed by James Whale. Yeah. And, you know, this was around the time where Boris Karloff was really popular. He did Frankenstein in 1931. And then a year later, he did The Mummy, which I think back in these times, they were kind of working on two different films at the same time. You know, they were really trying to pump these out. So he was just really popular. And in the opening credits, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but it puts the monster question mark because they didn't want to give it away who was playing the monster. And I'm sure that was a marketing ploy to kind of have people figure out or try to speculate who the monster was in terms of the actor. So then after, you know, the movie ends, the credits do show Boris Karloff. other actors in this movie. I'm just going to go over kind of the cast a little bit if people are familiar. Again, these may not be familiar names just because of the age of this movie. But Colin Clive played Victor Frankenstein, and he went on to also be in The Bride of Frankenstein. Mae Clark was Elizabeth Lavenza. And I don't think I really recognize too many other folks in this movie. Dwight Fry is Fritz. I'm sure he was in a lot of other things too back in the day. He just kind of has that iconic look. John Bowles is Victor Moritz, very kind of Clark Gable looking fellow. But yeah, so I think this movie's kind of funny too for Boris Karloff because it's kind of a goofy role to play. You know, and he wasn't a serious actor. You know, he was in a lot of like comedies like Abbott and Costello and things like that. But I think his acting, the acting in the monster for Frankenstein was supposed to be serious. It wasn't supposed to be a comedy, but just trying to play that infant sort of mentality of learning how to walk and talk and all that stuff was kind of funny to watch him now. So this movie was a huge success, in my opinion, when it came out. I did recently watch another movie with Boris Karloff in it, and it was called The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. So I recognized him in that, too. He's a very recognizable actor when he doesn't have makeup on. So a very, very tall guy. And so I'm going to go into the plot a little bit. Again, the movie's pretty short, but it does, you know, follow a storyline. And, you know, we start out before the plot even starts. We start out with a presenter, and he's in, you know, a suit. And he's kind of talking to the audience. And I put this in my note as the OG trigger warning for audiences back then, because I feel like it was this hype that they would put on for these horror movies. Like, this is going to be the most terrifying thing you'll ever see in your life, and you won't be able to sleep for weeks. And I thought it was pretty funny the way that the presenter, he said, "This movie may shock you. It may horrify you." And he says at the end, "Well, we warned you." So it's kind of cheeky at the end there. Did you guys like that little presenter bit in the beginning?
Yeah, I thought it was cool. It's kind of funny. Change of pace for starting a movie.
Yeah, yeah. And I feel like this was popular for horror movies back then, where they wanted to kind of hype you up before the movie started. Like, what you're about to see is going to disturb you, you know, and that kind of already sets your mind to your mind's already conjuring up the most horrifying things it can think of. So it really plays on the psychology of the viewer, especially in a movie theater. Like, imagine this could only be watched in a movie theater back then, and it's dark, you know?
Yeah, I like a lot of the things they did back with older movies like that. Like, we covered The Bat previously. And, you know, in The Bat, they reveal who the bat is, but they tell the audience not to tell anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't spoil it, you know, for other people coming to see the movie.
Right. Yeah, because it's part of the experience. You know, it's part of the movie-going experience.
Yeah.
So I'm sure it was the same with this, because in the beginning, there was, like, this question mark as to who the monster is. So I'm sure people that saw this viewing first, people would ask him, "Who is a monster?" Well, you're going to have to go see it and find out. So there weren't, you know, commercials back. You had to go to a movie to watch a commercial for another movie. So it's not, it wasn't as accessible, you know. So this movie starts out with, you know, there's a funeral happening and people are kind of, you know, in their black, you know, grieving garb. And they're burying a body. It's a family member. This family's not important, right? It's the guys that are just outside the fence peeping in on this family that are important. And it's a well-to-do dress guy and another guy that kind of looks a little scruffy, if you will, smaller. And they're kind of waiting for the funeral to be over. Once the funeral's over, they go in and they dig up the body, essentially. It takes them a while because, you know, 6 feet deep is a big hole to dig. And they had like one old dude, like, put all the dirt in that hole. It seems insane. And he like walks off with a cigar. So they dig the body back up. I guess get the name Fritz for the helper guy. He kind of has a hunch, you know, which now we iconically know is Igor from Young Frankenstein.
What hump?
Right. And, I guess the Hunchback of Notre Dame, you know, was kind of another story with the hunchback person. But this guy's name is Fritz, which, you know, is a cool name. And he's kind of, you know, not on the same level as the other guy. His name is Henry Frankenstein. Again, not like the book. His name is Henry Frankenstein. And they're digging up the body and they're going to take it with them. And they're going to go back to, I guess, their lair at this point. We don't really know where they're going, but they're going down the road. And I guess this was back in the day where like anyone who got hanged publicly just sat there for a little while, because they're going down the road and they see a guy that's been hanged and they, you know, cut him down. And Henry says, oh, his neck's broken. His brain's no good. Right. Because once the neck's broken, the brain dies, I guess. So he said, we're going to have to, you know, figure out another way to get a brain. Fritz is tasked with finding a brain. He goes to the local medical school that Henry used to attend. But he goes to the local medical school and he's kind of peering in on this professor who's doing a lecture. And he's talking about, you know, how brains work and psychology. And it's a little on the side of phrenology, in my opinion, the way he's talking about it. But he's talking about, you know, how the abnormal brain looks different from the normal brain. And he talks about how the abnormal brain came from a patient who was a criminal. He was institutionalized and he had a life full of violence and murder. And the normal brain, we don't know, just some normal guy that just paid taxes and went about his day and got married and had kids. So when the lecture's over, Fritz breaks in. He takes the normal brain and he's really kind of spooked at this point, right? Because he's not supposed to be in there in the first place. He's breaking in. He hears a sound. It startles him. He drops the glass container with the normal brain, which at that point, I'm pretty sure you could probably still use it. It doesn't seem like it has to be in formaldehyde or whatever they were using back then. But he kind of, you know, takes it as a loss. And he takes the next best thing, which is the abnormal brain, and, you know, kicks rocks. So he brings the brain back to Henry, you know, to use for the experiment, which we still don't know, but we can kind of guess based on the movie title and kind of what they're grabbing as to what this is going to be. So we kind of cut to a different scene entirely, to a woman. She's, you know, a rich woman in a house waiting for her lover, as most of these movies, you know, usually go. And she's really concerned about her fiance, Henry. And she received a letter from him recently, and it's pretty disturbing when she reads it out loud. It's he's talking about his experiment, but he can't really go into detail. But it seems that what he's talking about is very foreboding, and that he has made discoveries that would kind of change the world as we know it. And so he's being very cryptic in his speech, and she's talking to her friend Victor, again, not Victor Frankenstein, Victor the other dude in this movie. He's like a family friend, and he's kind of got a crush on Elizabeth. He's like really into her, which is surprising to me. Did you guys find that weird?
Yeah. I found it weird, and also felt like that he had a problem with personal space. Because even throughout the movie, whoever he was talking to was like pretty much standing right up against
them. They're like, dude, get a mint.
Close talker.
Yeah, he was definitely into Elizabeth. She's kind of the one that got away, you know, but he's not bitter about it, right? He doesn't have like this this jealousy or toxic feelings towards Henry. So it's just something to throw in there that Elizabeth is desired, right, by other suitors. And so she kind of tells him like, hey, I'm a little concerned about Henry. Do you think that you could maybe possibly go check on him, being that you're his friend and all, and that you're like in love with me? And he's like, I would go to the lengths, the ends of the world for you, Elizabeth, my friend, and only my friend. And so, you know, he's going out the door. And she decides, you know what, I'm just going to come with you, you know, because why not? I thought for sure they were going to hook up during this event, but they don't. That would have been a lot juicier, but a little too salacious for 1931. I mean, we saw how Psycho went. That was laying, two people laying in bed. That was like, whew, this is a little too much. So they decide to go, you know, to the medical school that Henry was at to see if he's okay. They kind of knew that he dropped out of school. They just kind of want to know why and get an idea of what other people thought of Henry and why he had dropped out. Because, again, they're not really getting the full story. And so Victor and Elizabeth go to Dr. Waldman. He was the professor that kind of ran that program, that medical school program. And they're kind of asking him about, you know, do you have any idea of what, you know, Henry's working on? And they're kind of probing him for answers. And he pretty much tells them what was going on. He goes, look, Henry was getting into some weird shit. He was talking about, you know, resurrecting people from the dead and playing God. And that's just not what this, you know, institution is about. And he was working on animals, you know, and then he started working his way up to humans like a serial killer. So, you know, it just kind of went above and beyond the mission statement of what this school is about. And so it's pretty disturbing. And they want to go kind of have an intervention with Henry. And so they're able to convince Dr. Waldman to go with them because he, you know, knows Henry most recently in his, you know, descent into madness. And so they thought that maybe he could talk some sense into him. And, you know, he's a little reluctant, but he agrees to go anyways, just because of their concern. And I think he's kind of curious to see what Henry's working on. And, you know, in the letter, Henry had mentioned that he's working in like a watchtower or something. And he kind of is very specific about his location. So they're able to find him very quickly. Which is kind of, if he never mentioned that at all, I think he probably would have had more time to do his experiments. So it's pretty stormy, you know, this night. Elizabeth, Victor, and Dr. Waldman go to the watchtower to, you know, confront Henry. Henry and Fritz are actually, they've got everything they've needed. And they put together this body, you know, and we kind of see a hand, you know, that he sutured up and he kind of shows the head, which is covered in gauze. But we see, you know, that he has made a surgical, you know, kind of incision at the head. So he says that he put the brain in there. They're going to hoist him up to the very top of the tower because there's this crazy ass like electrical storm going on. And they're going to use some electrodes, some zappy stuff, some Tesla coils to kind of get the vibe going. And they're going to hoist him up to the very top. He's going to get electrocuted and resurrected. So they do that. But right before they do that, they get interrupted. And because it's super stormy, he lets Elizabeth, Victor, and Dr. Waldman in. And, you know, they were kind of calling him crazy. And he's like, fine, you want to see crazy? Come in. You know, watch this shit. And so they witnessed the whole thing, which is wild that, you know, he let them in after all those years of work. But because it was such a risk, right? He must have been so crazy that he thought that people would just understand at this point, which kind of worked in his favor because that's what happened. So they're able to bring back or bring down the body that he has prepared after it was introduced to the storm. And at first it's kind of seeming like, okay, nothing's happening. And then the arm starts raising up in the hand. And then you get the iconic scene. Does anybody want to quote the scene for me? No? Okay. It's alive! It's alive! Okay, I got it. Don't worry about it.
I figured Aaron wanted to do
it. Okay. You guys are like both.
I don't want to interrupt them.
Are you gonna do? Are you gonna do
it? Slinking down the chair.
I'm just kidding.
He was taking a bite of his sandwich. He's like, oh, fuck. What was the alarm?
Too much mayo.
Too much mayo. Yeah, gross. And so now he knows what it's like to feel like God. You know, he is the Prometheus of his subject. So. This is a God complex now that we have with this guy, which is great. And so very weird cut at this point because we see this happen, and then boom, we're back to Elizabeth and Victor trying to convince Henry's dad that everything is fine. You know, there's not really, it wasn't a smooth transition in terms of storyline, but we just go with it anyways. I'm sure there was more to it that they cut out because, again, they had to keep it at the 120 minutes. So, or I'm sorry, the 90 minutes. It was an hour and 20 minutes is what I meant. So they're telling Henry's dad, look, he's, you know, he's taking a couple days off. He's on a bender. He'll be back in a few days because, again, Elizabeth is engaged to Henry. They're supposed to be getting married very soon. And it's not looking good that Henry is MIA and nobody can get a hold of him. So his dad's like, he's obviously in love with another woman. Says it right in front of his fiance, which I think is kind of messed up. But this old dude, this dad, so funny. He laughs with every word that he says. He's like, he's with another woman, you know. And he's always smoking and drinking, which I find admirable. So he's going to go, you know, figure out what's going on with his son. And, you know, the truth is that Henry and the professor are still in the watchtower the bell tower with the monster. And, you know, the professor is saying, look, you put an abnormal brain in this thing. And Henry didn't know that until that moment that he's like, oh, that wasn't the normal brain. And the professor's like, yeah, this thing is going to wreak havoc. It doesn't know kindness or a normal life. And you need to kill it. Like, this has gone too far. You made your point. Now it's time to get rid of the monster. So they agree. They got to do something to put this guy out of his misery. You know, because Henry at first was like, well, he just needs some time to develop. And, you know, he's in his infant stage and trying to walk around. And we do see the monster moving around. This is when we first see the monster come in as Boris Karloff. And it's pretty funny because the eyes are all like rolled back in the head. The lighting is so like moody, you know, with the way that it with the special effects and how they, you know, cast shadows and everything. Very iconic moment when we see the monster for the first time. And he's kind of walking around. He's got bolts in his neck. He's got a very like Cro-Magnon kind of, you know, forehead, and he's walking very stiff. You know, obviously, I believe the actor was wearing like platform boots, like, you know, the goth kids do. And so just kind of walking pretty stiff, not really knowing how to do stuff, but he can listen to commands like sit down, you know. So there's still some cognitive function there. And Henry's pretty excited and he's kind of bummed that he's going to have to kill the monster. But I think he's pretty convinced this monster is just way too big and dangerous. So they decide to like kind of put the monster in the dungeon, tie him up, you know, as a prisoner. Fritz, the, you know, helper dude, is a douchebag to the monster. He's like whipping him and he's just like kind of torturing him essentially. And the monster is able to like get his hands free from the rope that was tying him up. And he just hangs Fritz. Like, you hear Fritz screaming and they go in and Fritz is hanging from the wall. So, very quick acting on the monster's part. And, you know, when they found Fritz hanging, they're like, you know, he was kind of a dick to the monster. Like, I can see why he killed him. He definitely hated him. So they decide that, you know, he's killed his first person. So now they need to act a lot sooner. They get this sort of like sedated drug in a needle, and they're going to try to, set up a diversion to have Henry coax the monster out. And then the professor is going to jump on him and, you know, inject him, which he does. And, you know, the monster is like strangling Henry, but then he, you know, passes out before he could kill him. And so it's perfect timing because Elizabeth, Henry's dad, and Victor are just down the street coming up to see what's up with Henry. So they decide, okay, we got to drag the monster into something else, you know, like another room, get it all spruced up, make it look like we didn't just resurrect the dead here. And the dad shows up and he's banging on the door. And the dad's like pretty disappointed in the living conditions his son has been living in because he comes from a rich family, you know? He's kind of living in not squalor, but he's living in an old abandoned bell tower or watchtower. So he's kind of, you know, just checking out, seeing what's up with Henry and kind of talking some sense into him. Like, dude, you're going to get married in a couple days. You need to get down to the house. And so there was like some sort of, when he was moving the monster, he had like a head injury. So when they found him, he was kind of like half conscious. So they decided to take him with them. Henry goes back to his dad's house. And so Waldman, the professor, is left with the monster to, you know, end up killing him. So the monster is still knocked out. He has him on the table and he's like getting things ready to kill him. And the monster wakes up and strangles the professor. So he's able to escape from this tower. And he, you know, decides to go into the, you know, countryside, which they're in Germany. So it's very Bavarian style countryside. Think of The Sound of Music. And there you go. That's what this was. Very opposite of The Sound of Music, though. In terms of the plot line. So I thought this scene was kind of cute where Elizabeth and Henry are back home and they're, you know, just kind of ogling each other and falling in love again. And they're like, you know what? We need to get married ASAP. We've taken too long. Let's just do it. The wedding's back on. The whole town is all dressed up in their lederhosen and they're having alcohol and the dad's all excited. He's getting everyone drunk. He's pulling out the best grandma wine. And everyone's having a party for the wedding. I like it what the dad says. He's like, you get a, you know, a little bit of liquor in these town folks, these townies, and they get along just fine. But tomorrow they're all going to be fighting again. So everyone's having a good time. And, you know, we see the monster, you know, in the countryside. He's coming up upon this house. He's kind of lurking. And we see this little girl and she's talking to her dad and he's like, hey, I got to go into town to grab something. You stay here. She's got a little kitten with her. And this scene is disturbing. If you see the details, this little girl's like strangling this kitten for the scene just to keep it still. Did you guys notice that?
When they show the face like over the fence, like it had to be screaming.
Good God. Yes. I'm like, that cat is like half dead. Like, that girl is strangling the shit out of that cat. I mean, the other scenes are fine. It was just that one scene where I'm like, good Lord. Someone help that cat. So the little girl is, you know, playing near a pond and pretty big pond, probably a lake. And she's picking daisies, you know, like all little girls do with her kitten. Super cute. And the monster, you know, comes up on her and she's kind of startled at first. You know, 6'7" dude coming up on you is pretty scary. But then she kind of, you know, he's just standing there not talking. So she's like, do you want to play with me? And, you know, she takes his hand and they're, you know, picking daisies. And she's like, you can have this one, but you can't have these. And he's kind of playing back. You know, he's trying to figure out what's going on. And what they're doing is they're like taking the heads off of the daisy stem and then just kind of like throwing the daisies in the water and watching them float. And they're having a good time. And, you know, she's throwing the daisies in there. And then the monster throws a daisy in there. And he's like, you know, like a Beavis and Butthead kind of dude. And then he's like, oh, well, why don't I just throw you in there? And so he picks up the little girl and just like throws her like a sack of potatoes in the water. She doesn't know how to swim, apparently. Dad probably should have taught her how to swim if they live right next to a pond. But, you know, she's wearing a dress. Gets heavy. It's kind of hard to swim in a dress. And unfortunately, she dies, which I thought was pretty, like, rough for 1931. He just throws her in and then she just doesn't resurface.
What happened to the cat, though?
The cat took off as soon as they got free from her grasp, from her death grip.
Never to be seen again.
Right. That cat went off to live a very good life. That's what I'm going to tell myself. So, you know, the monster realizes, like, something's wrong. Like, he can't really comprehend what's happened, but he knows he just fucked up. So he's like freaking out, you know, and he's kind of like waving his arms in the air and moaning and just getting the hell out of there because he doesn't know what to do. We get it. We get a scene. Just laughing at my own notes. We get a scene where these Bavarian people are doing this traditional Bavarian dance in their lederhosen and they're slapping their knees. It's just a funny scene because I'm like, oh, the good old knee slap dance I did in the summertime when the mosquitoes are out. They're just slapping their knees. I don't know what they're doing. I would really like to know what that means, like how that came about. But they're having a good time. It's just really random. And, you know, Elizabeth is, you know, in her wedding gown and she's got her hair all done up. And her nails did. And she just looks so beautiful. Like, she's so pretty. You know, very, like, Art Deco style pretty. And she can't help but feel like something's wrong. She doesn't know what it is. She just feels like doom is approaching. And she's talking to Henry about it. And he's like, don't worry about it. Look at all these people having fun, slapping their knees. What could possibly go wrong? And then we hear like a moan. Is it a moan or something? Because right before like that, you know, in the house, Victor comes in and tells Henry, hey, Waldman's dead. Couldn't find the monster. And we fucked. So now they know that the monster is in the house. Right. And, you know, Elizabeth's like, I told you so. And they're looking for the monster in the house. They think that he's in the cellar, but he's not. While they're in the cellar, the monster is actually creeping up on Elizabeth because he notices that she looks like a pretty little daisy. He wants to throw her in the water. So the monster comes into her bedroom and startles her and strangles her. And when they come into the room, they can't because it's like locked at first because they told her to lock herself in the room for protection. But as soon as they break down the door, she's like, you know, laid across the bed. And I thought for sure she was a goner. Like if Waldman can't, you know, I don't know, maybe the monster like gave up halfway through. Maybe he realized like he's doing it again. But thankfully, he did not kill Elizabeth. She was still alive. And she was very frazzled, obviously. Everybody's very frazzled. And now they realize, you know, we've got a killer on the loose. We got to go find him. I don't think the townspeople at this point knew what they were looking for. Maybe, you know, Henry didn't want to say what he looked like. You know, he's like, just look for a 6'7" dude and you'll find him. Right. You'll know him when you see him, because he doesn't really tell them, I don't think, what they're looking for. He just says monster. So, I mean, that could be subjective, right? I mean, Ted Bundy was a monster, you know, looked normal, I guess. So they all kind of like split up, you know, but before that, you know, that's going on in the house. Right. And then down the road, we've got the dad and he's carrying his daughter and she's all wet. She's dead. Very heartbreaking. He goes to the police and he tells them, look, my daughter drowned. And they're like, that's not like a crime. And he's like, no, but somebody killed her. Like somebody drowned her. And they're like, oh, shit. And so they meet up with the people at the house and they're like, hey, we got one person that almost died. We got a little girl that's killed. We now have to join forces. And now the whole fucking town is looking for this monster. So they have search parties. They got bloodhounds, you know, the woo-woo-woo kind of bloodhounds. They've got their pitchforks and torches and all that stuff. So so now when they're looking, and again, this takes some time for like Henry to catch up to the monster. And it just so happens that Henry and the monster kind of come face to face with nobody else around. So it's like a showdown between the two of them. And it's within the mountains too. So everybody's kind of looking and they get into like a little bit of a, like a wrestling match. The monster kind of pushes Henry down onto the floor, which in this scene is kind of wild because the actor who plays Henry, he falls onto the torch that's on fire and he's there for a while. And I'm like, oh shit, is he going to catch on fire?
Right.
And they left that in there. They were like, and that's take. Or he just kept going. Like, it's wild to me that he must not have known that like what the situation was, because he just kept going and acting like nothing was wrong, which is kind of cool, you know, for the movie itself.
Yeah.
So the monster is able to like kind of subdue Henry, and he takes him to this windmill that's pretty close by, very old school kind of windmill made out of wood. And now the whole town, you know, can hear this kind of kerfuffle, and they go to the windmill. The monster's in there. He locks them both in there. He takes Henry to the top, and they're like, you know, Henry wakes up. They're still having their fisticuffs showdown. And I was like, I think he's going to push the monster off. I think this is how it's going to end. No, the monster throws Henry off the balcony, and Henry's body hits like one of the windmill blades and then falls onto the ground, which I was like, that's a pretty cool scene. Like that scene was, I think they used a dummy for that scene because it looked pretty realistic and full scale to me. So Henry's now on the ground. I was pretty sure he was dead at that point. I'm pretty sure he broke his neck. The brain was not good anymore. But apparently, we know. I mean, everybody's kind of crowding around, but nobody calls it. You know, nobody calls the time. So, you know, it's kind of unknown if he's still alive or not. And the town's fucking pissed at this point. So they have all of these torches, and they're like, let's just set this whole windmill on fire. And it reminded me of Alice in Wonderland, the Disney cartoon version, where she's like super big in the house, and they're like, you know, they can't get her out, so they just burn the house down, and they say we smoke the monster out. They're like singing it all cheerfully as they set the house on fire. That's kind of what it reminded me of, and so I wonder if, you know, that kind of got some inspiration from this. But yeah, they set the whole thing on fire, and because it's made out of wood, and hey, it goes up pretty quickly. And kind of heartbreaking in a certain sense, like in terms of the monster's emotion, but he's terrified of fire, and so the whole place is on fire, and he's really like distraught and, you know, kind of crying and wailing, and, you know, the whole thing just goes up in flames. So, you know, we assume that's kind of what happens at this point. He dies. And I thought this scene with the fire going on, the monster yelling, the people outside, and the dogs barking, I thought that the sound was really well done, because a lot of old movies, the sound was really bad. And sometimes it kind of, you know, leveled out in a sense, but they overlaid everything perfectly. You could hear everything without it competing with itself. And so I thought that whoever did the sound effects or sound design for this movie did an excellent job, especially for this scene in particular. It's a very complex scene in terms of audio. So I just want to give credit there since we're talking about it. But we get a scene, last scene here of the movie. Henry is alive and he's recovering at his dad's house. And, you know, the dad kind of walks out because there's all these maids giggling outside, and they're like, you know, we thought that, you know, grandma's wine would really cheer up Henry. And the dad's like, oh, you don't want to go in there. Let me come out here with you gals. And he's like, you know, pouring the wine, and he's, you know, toasting. And he says, he's got his cigar with him, of course. And he goes, here's to the house of Frankenstein. And he takes a drink, and the end. That's it. And then, like I said, the end credits, we see the monster as credited as Boris Karloff. And that's it.
That's it. Frankenstein.
Super quick. I think that might be the quickest we've ever done through a run through.
Yeah, I think so. I thought there's some scenes in the movie that kind of made me giggle. Like when they hear the monster and they go searching for him, they're like, to the attic. And they run up to the attic and they're like, looking behind chairs and, you know, really small stuff. You know, there's a big, huge monster. And he's like looking behind a chair. And then, what's that noise? You know, to the cellar. You know, and they're just spreading all around the house.
It's rich people, big house problems. You know what I mean? You can never figure out where the sound is. Your house is just too rich and too big. You know, I feel for them.
Yeah, it was just funny looking behind like a box or something. Well, he's not there.
They're like, he's in the fireplace. Look up the chimney. Is he behind that kitten? Strangle the kitten.
All right. This is the part of the show where we do our reviews and ratings, and we do rate on a 10 scale, 0 to 10, and usually try to come up with something to describe our rating to make it interesting. And since this is Ariel's movie, she gets to go last, save the best for last, and I'm going to use my host privilege, and I'm going to go first. How's that?
Sounds good to me.
Okay. Cool. Mine is going to be super short and super sweet. I mean, it's a classic movie. It's very original, especially for its time. I mean, it was never done before, and it's just been remade so many times after that. It's a good watch. It does have some humor in it. It breaks it up some. And, I mean, it may not be in-your-face type humor, but it's still there. Very entertaining. It's a must-watch. I mean, if you're going to be a horror fan, this has to be one of your, you know, basic movies that you go to when you start watching horror. Maybe not your first or whatever, but it has to be up there. And I would definitely give this one a 9.5. He's in the cellar out of 10.
Azrael, I think you're the next one resurrected.
Yeah.
Am I alive?
It's alive!
It's alive!
All right. I want to say the first time I seen it was a kid. There used to be a Midwest, I think it's still on TV show, Svengoolie, and they would show a lot of these monster films. So I saw it at a pretty young age. I don't remember being scared by it, but, you know, I think that it was one of the first, like, monster films. And then I started watching, like, the monsters and other, you know, adaptations of the character. But, you know, to me, it's, when you say Frankenstein, this is, like, the first one that I always think of. And there's been, like, over, I want to say, like, 65 films that have been done about Frankenstein, but I would have to say this is probably the most iconic. Like, some of the things that I really like about it, like the cinematography, and I think the musical score kind of really helps set that, like, haunting atmosphere throughout the movie. It's definitely, I mean, it came out in 1931, so it's, compared to today's standards, it's, you know, it's pretty dated. It's not scary, but it's definitely worth watching if you're a fan of horror or sci-fi or, you know, monster films. It's definitely worth watching, and it's, you know, one of the best, and I think it set a lot of it's one that, you know, horror film or like makeup artists or directors and stuff that refer back to this film, like Tom Savini always talks about a lot of these films, and, you know, these are some of his favorites that inspired him. So
not to mention the Munsters.
The Munsters, yeah.
Yes. One of the best shows of all time.
You're talking about the movie, right? Rob Zombies?
No, come on. Come on.
I'm sorry.
Don't you dare. Don't you dare, Azrael.
So, yeah, with that, for me, I would give this 9.3. Frankenstein, little girl tosses into the water.
Oh, come on. You took mine.
I think this is like the third one. We're like on the same wavelength.
It's like every week.
Oh, man. I think we just have the same dark sense of humor. I was like, should I go girls in the water or strangled kittens? I can't decide.
And that was going to be my other one. I'm like, she's going to. I'm like, she can't.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
That's a pretty high score. I think I might shock you guys. Yeah. I mean, everything you guys said is totally valid. I do like watching really old movies. I'm talking like super old movies. And this one's pretty good in my opinion, in terms, like I said, the sound, the special effects, the lighting, the acting, everything is really good, but kind of goofy from Boris Karloff, which I guess as a kid, like, I thought everything was goofy back then. But then as an adult watching this, I realized it was intentionally goofy, which I was a little bit surprised by, given the seriousness of the novel. And this movie was kind of set up to be like a play almost. And it could be a really, really good play. I'm sure people have done it before, but it's such a dramatic plot line. You know, and there's a lot of very thought-provoking and moral philosophical issues with this, you know, plot line. I don't like that the movie didn't follow the novel more closely. I think that it missed out on a lot of things. But I do feel like if it tried to be too serious, it may not have been as fun, you know? And so this movie is very fun to watch, both as a kid and adult. I don't feel like it's too cheesy to where it really takes you out of it. You know, it's just kind of when he's, you know, first walking around, it's kind of goofy. I don't feel like as a horror movie, this one is too creepy in comparison to other ones that I've seen even before its time. You know, The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. And, you know, there's some other movies too, like silent films that are pretty creepy in comparison. So I think with that said, it's not the best thing I've seen. It's not the best thing I've seen Boris Karloff in. And I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10 knee slap dances, I think, from me.
5 out of 10.
I'm not a monster movie kind of person. I don't find them scary. I really don't.
Yeah, it's not.
Like
it's
Godzilla, not The Mummy. They just don't scare me at all.
Lederhosen.
But you get some Victorian ghosts up in here. I am like leaving the lights on, I swear. You get some nuns that are possessed by a demon. Get out of here. I'm leaving y'all behind.
Those are fun movies too.
I know, because they're creepy, because you just can't control, like, ghosts can be anywhere.
Right.
You know?
Anywhere. Like right behind you.
Exactly. Right, where you know where a 6'7" monster is. You can hear it coming.
Just go behind, sit the on chair. The couch.
What'd you say, Azrael?
Behind a chair.
Right, behind a chair. Exactly. That's where a ghost is. Could be behind a chair, up on the ceiling.
Yeah.
Well, all right. That concludes our monthly theme of resurrection movies.
I think we had a good list for this month.
Yeah, I think we did.
I think that was a pretty good variety.
We had Resurrection, Who'da Thunk, The Crow, and coming out soon,
Halloween 3.
Halloween 3, yeah.
Wait.
Yep. No, Halloween 3's out.
No.
What are you doing to me?
Halloween 3, The Lazarus Effect.
Lazarus Effect. Of course, at the time of this recording, Lazarus Effect is not out yet. So, a little spoiler.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Well, that's the next one coming up, right, that you were getting into? Mm-hmm. Now, that one's creepy. That one did creep me out.
Yeah.
The black eyes, ooh, not liking it.
It could have been a really good movie. You can listen to the episode and see what I really think. All right. Well, we're going to be moving on to a new theme. And since May does have Mother's Day in it, we are going to do horror movies that feature moms, mothers, mamas, scary moms, crazy moms, weird moms, whatever kind of mom you have. And I think you guys are going to like my pick, my first pick for mom month. It's a movie talked about doing forever, and I finally want to do it. You guys excited? You ready to hear?
Yeah, I'm ready for a drum roll.
Ready?
Anticipation is killing me.
Does it smell like bacon?
Yeah.
It is Hereditary.
Oh, shit. Oh, I love this movie. Nice. Oh, man. Oh, geez. Oh.
I'll let you guys.
Listeners, this is our first time hearing this.
Right, exactly. I am shocked.
This is a genuine reaction. Are we going to be able to fit everything I have to say about this movie in one episode?
It might be a two-parter.
This is like one of my top five. I even did say it like in my list of best movies ever made for horror.
I think you did. Mm. All right. Well, now that I got you too excited, I'm excited. I was excited to tell y'all.
Yeah, so who's gonna do the run through? Are you gonna do the run through?
One of you. Flip a coin, I guess.
I think it's Azrael's turn. Azrael, I think you got this one. Good luck.
All right.
Because this movie is fucking wild.
It's like 2 hours long too, isn't it? I think.
Yes, yeah, pretty long.
Yeah, I think you're gonna have to shave off a little bit because this movie is very deep. I'm gonna have to like pretend that I don't have more to say about this movie when we actually review it, because this movie is one of those ones you could probably do a whole thesis on and get your graduate degree.
Right. Yeah,
I could see it more of as a discussion than like a quick run through. So that'll be fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, all right. I hope everybody's excited, listeners out there. And if you have a movie that excites you, you like that segue, you can always get a hold of us at storiestodismember@gmail.com. or check us out on social medias. Just search Stories to Dismember. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, all that good stuff. You can also call us and leave us a message at 817-405-4196. You can also text that phone number and let us know what horror movie gets you excited or scares you or keeps you up at night or all that good stuff.
Or just recommendations for either this month, for the mother's kind of month, I guess, the mother's month. And then also, we still haven't really picked a theme for June yet. So if you've got an idea for June, that would be very helpful because none of us have even thought about it yet. So if you have any suggestions, I don't know how we're going to tie in June. Juneteenth is the only, I think, holiday, and I don't know if we're going to go there.
Well, Father's Day.
Antebellum?
Oh, Father's Day. Yeah.
There's a couple of movies. Father's Day. That would be a good follow-up. Listeners, let us know if you want to do Father's Day. That one's a lot easier in terms of movies. I feel like fathers are a little bit more violent than mothers.
Yeah. Ooh, Shining.
Ooh. Yeah, Shining.
Have you guys done The Shining yet?
Don't ask me. You know, I forget. I talked about a movie I watched that you guys watched with me, and I forgot. That's what happens.
That's true. You know what? You can watch The Shining as much as you want. Yeah. Nobody's going to judge you.
That's what happens when you're, you know, half century old vampire like me.
Yeah. So in my house, we're designing our movie room, and I'm trying to do like The Shining esque for the movie room. So I'm getting like the Overlook Hotel rug, and we're painting the walls red, and I'm going to have like all these little tchotchkes everywhere for the movie. I'll have to get some Calumet tomato fans or something. Yeah.
An axe sticking out of the door. Well, all right.
You know, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah, it could be your door handle.
Oh.
All right. That's it for me this week. Unless you two got anything you want to say? Any last words?
Somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Oh, you should be fired just for saying that.
That's all right. I'll just take my stapler with me on my way out.
I still like to burn this fucking place down. Oh, I guess we took care of the glitch. We'll see you next week. Alrighty. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the Stories to Dismember podcast. Please be sure to tell your friends, subscribe, and leave a rating. You can contact us at storiestodismember@gmail.com, and we'd love to hear from you. You can also follow us on TikTok at Stories to Dismember. The music for Stories to Dismember is provided by Windfeather. Can't wait to hang out with you next time. Bye-bye.